the leader of the Belgian scientific group that made the discovery. The name TRAPPIST is both an acronym for the telescope used by the group and a reference to Belgium's popular beer. TRAPPIST-1 is a red dwarf a mere 38 light-years from Earth, and its mass is only 8% that of the Sun. Like Proxima Centauri, it has a habitable zone. If transposed over our own solar system, the orbits of all 7 planets would fit inside Mercury's path. The planets take less than 3 weeks to circle the mother star, and the innermost makes a complete revolution in 36 hours. Because the solar system is so compact, the planets interact gravitationally and could, in theory, disrupt their own arrangement and collide. One might naively expect them to careen into one another. But fortunately, an analysis in 2017 showed that they are in resonance, meaning that their orbits are in phase with one another, and no collisions will take place. The solar system seems to be stable. But, as with Proxima Centauri b, astronomers are investigating the possible effects of solar flares and tidal locking. On Star Trek, whenever the Enterprise is about to encounter an Earth-like planet, Spock announces that they are approaching a Class M planet. Actually, there's no such thing in astronomy. Yet. Now that thousands of different types of planets have made their debut, including a variety of Earth-like planets, it's only a matter of time before a new nomenclature is introduced. Twin of the Earth? If a planetary twin of the Earth exists in space, it has eluded us so far. But we have found about 50 super-Earths so far. Kepler-452b, which was discovered by the Kepler spacecraft in 2015 and is about 1,400 light-years from us, is particularly interesting. It is 50% bigger than our planet, so you would weigh more than you do on the planet Earth. But otherwise, living there may not be so different from living on Earth. Unlike the exoplanets that orbit around a red dwarf, it circles a star that is only 3.7% more massive than the Sun. Its period of revolution is 385 Earth days, and its equilibrium temperature is 17 degrees Fahrenheit, slightly warmer than the Earth. It lies within the habitable zone. Astronomers searching for extraterrestrial intelligence train their radio telescopes to receive messages from any civilization that might be on the planet, but have detected none as yet. Unfortunately, because Kepler-452b is so far away, even the next generation of telescopes will not be able to collect significant information about its atmospheric composition. Kepler-22b, which is 600 light-years away and 2.4 times the size of the Earth, is also being studied. Its orbit is 15% smaller than Earth's. It completes one revolution in 290 days. But the luminosity of its mother star, Kepler-22, is 25% lower than the Sun's. These two effects compensate for each other, so the surface temperature of the planet is believed to be comparable to that of the Earth. It also lies in the habitable zone. But KOI-7711 is the exoplanet that is getting the most attention because, as of 2017, it is the one with the most Earth-like features. It is 30% larger than Earth, and its mother star is very much like our own. It is not at risk of being fried by solar flares. The length of 1 year on the planet is almost identical to a year on Earth. It is in the habitable zone of its star. But we do not yet have the technology to evaluate whether its atmosphere contains water vapor. All conditions seem right for it to host some form of life. However, at 1,700 light-years away, it is the farthest exoplanet of the three. After analyzing scores of these planets, astronomers have discovered that they can usually be arranged into two categories. The first is the super-Earths we have been discussing. Mini-Neptunes is the other. They are gaseous planets about 2 to 4 times the size of the Earth and do not resemble anything in our immediate vicinity. Our Neptune is 4 times bigger than Earth. Once a small planet is discovered, astronomers try to determine which category it belongs to. This is like biologists trying to classify a new animal as either being a mammal or reptile. One mystery is why these categories aren't represented in our own solar system when they seem to be so prominent elsewhere in space. Rogue planets. Rogue planets are among the strangest celestial bodies that have been discovered so far. They wander the galaxy without orbiting any particular star. They probably originated in a solar system, but got too close to a Jupiter-sized exoplanet and were hurled into deep space. As we have seen, these large Jupiter-sized planets frequently have elliptical orbits or migrate in a spiral toward the mother star. It is likely that their paths intersected with smaller planets, and as a consequence, rogue planets might be more plentiful than ordinary ones. In fact, according to some computer models, our own solar system may have ejected 10 or so rogue planets billions of years ago. Because rogue planets are not near a light source and give off no light themselves, it seemed hopeless at first to try to locate them. But astronomers have been able to find some through the gravitational lensing technique, which requires a very precise and quite rare alignment to take place between the background star, the rogue planet, and the detector on Earth. As a result, one has to scan millions of stars in order to detect a handful of rogues. Fortunately, this process can be automated so that computers, not astronomers, do the searching. Thus far, 20 potential rogue planets have been identified, one of which is only 7 light-years from Earth. However, another recent study, conducted by Japanese astronomers who examined 50 million stars, found even more possible candidates, up to 470 rogue planets. They estimated that there might be 2 rogue planets for every star in the Milky Way. Other astronomers have speculated that the number of rogue planets could exceed the number of ordinary ones by a factor of 100,000. Can life as we know it exist on rogue planets? It depends. Like Jupiter or Saturn, some may have a large number of ice-covered moons. If so, tidal forces could melt the ice into oceans, where life may originate. But in addition to sunlight and tidal forces, there is a third way in which a rogue planet may have an energy source that could give birth to life. Radioactivity. An episode from the history of science might help to illustrate this point. In the late 19th century, a simple calculation done by the physicist Lord Kelvin showed that Earth should have cooled down a few million years after its creation and therefore should be frozen solid and inhospitable to life. This result sparked a debate with biologists and geologists, who insisted that the Earth was billions of years old. The physicists were shown to be wrong when Madame Curie and others discovered radioactivity. It is the nuclear force at the core of the Earth, from long-lived radioactive elements like uranium, that has kept Earth's core hot for billions of years. Astronomers have conjectured that rogue planets, too, might have radioactive cores that keep them relatively warm. This means a radioactive core could supply heat to hot springs and volcanic vents on the bottom of an ocean where the chemicals of life may be created. So if rogue planets are as numerous as some astronomers believe, then the most probable place to find life in the galaxy may not be within the habitable zone of a star, but on the rogue planets and their moons. Oddball planets. Astronomers are also researching a plethora of completely startling planets, some of which defy categorization. In the movie Star Wars, the planet Tatooine revolves around 2 stars. Some scientists scoffed at this idea because such a planet would be in an unstable orbit and would collapse into one of the stars. But planets circling 3 stars have been documented, as in the Centauri system. We've even found four-star systems, in which two sets of double stars move around each other. Another planet has been discovered that apparently may be made of diamonds. It is called 55 Cancri E, and is about double the size of the Earth, but weighs about 8 times more. In 2016, the Hubble Space Telescope successfully analyzed its atmosphere, the first time this had ever been done with a rocky exoplanet. It detected hydrogen and helium, but no water vapor. Later, the planet was found to be rich in carbon, which might constitute about a third of its mass. It is also scalding hot, with a temperature of 5,400 degrees Kelvin. One theory postulates that the heat and pressure in the core may be extraordinary enough to give rise to a diamond planet. However, these glittering deposits, if they indeed exist, are 40 light-years from us, so mining them is beyond our current capabilities. Possible water worlds and ice worlds have also been located. This is not necessarily unanticipated. It is believed that our own planet, early in its history, was covered in ice, a snowball Earth. At other times, when the ice ages receded, the planet was flooded with water. Gliese 1214b, the first of six known potentially water-covered exoplanets to be identified, was found in 2009. It is 42 light-years away and 6 times larger than the Earth. It lies outside the habitable zone, orbiting 70 times closer to its mother sun than the Earth does. It may get as hot as 280 degrees Celsius, so life as we know it probably cannot exist. But by using various filters to analyze light scattered through the planet's atmosphere as it transits the mother star, significant amounts of water have been confirmed. The water may not be in familiar liquid form due to the planet's temperature and pressure. Instead, Gliese 1214b might be a steam planet. We have come to a striking realization about the stars as well. We once thought that our yellow star was typical in the universe. But astronomers now believe that dim red dwarf stars, which emit only a fraction of the light of our sun and usually cannot be seen with the naked eye, are the most common. By one estimate, 85% of the stars in the Milky Way are red dwarfs. The smaller a star is, the slower it burns hydrogen fuel and the longer it can shine. Red dwarfs may last for trillions of years, far longer than the 10-billion-year lifespan of our sun. Perhaps it is not surprising that Proxima Centauri B and the TRAPPIST system both involve red dwarfs, because they are so numerous. Thus, the area around these stars may be one of the most promising sites to search for more Earth-like planets. Census of the Galaxy. The Kepler spacecraft has surveyed enough planets in the Milky Way galaxy that a rough census can be made. The data indicate that, on average, every star you see has some kind of planet orbiting around it. About 20% of the stars, like our sun, have Earth-like planets. That is, are similar to the Earth in size and are in the habitable zone. Since there are roughly 100 billion stars in the Milky Way, about 20 billion Earth-like planets may exist in our backyard. In fact, this is a conservative estimate. The actual number could be much higher. Unfortunately, the Kepler spacecraft, after sending a mountain of information that changed the way we conceptualize the universe, began to malfunction. One of its gyroscopes started to fail in 2013, and it lost the ability to lock onto planets. But further missions are being planned that will continue to augment our understanding of exoplanets. In 2018, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, TESS, will be launched. Unlike the Kepler, it will scan the entire sky. TESS will examine 200,000 stars over a two-year period, concentrating on stars that are 30 to 100 times brighter than those inspected by the Kepler, including all the possible Earth-sized planets or super-Earths in our region of the galaxy, a number astronomers expect to be around 500. Furthermore, the James Webb Space Telescope, the replacement for the Hubble Space Telescope, will be inaugurated shortly and should be able to actually photograph some of these exoplanets. Earth-like planets may be prime targets for future starships. Now that we are on the cusp of investigating them in depth, it is important to explore two considerations: living in outer space, with the biological demands it would entail, and encountering life in space. We must first take a look at our existence on the Earth and how it may be enhanced to meet new challenges. We may have to modify ourselves, extending our lifespan, adjusting our physiology, and even altering our genetic heritage. We will also have to contend with the possibility of discovering anything from microbes to advanced civilizations on these planets. Who might be out there, and what would it mean for us to meet them? Part 3. Life in the Universe. The eons involved in traversing the galaxy are not daunting to immortal beings. Sir Martin Rees, Astronomer Royal of England. Chapter 10. Immortality. The movie The Age of Adeline is the tale of a woman born in 1908 who is caught in a snowstorm and freezes to death. Fortunately, she is hit by a freak lightning bolt, which revives her. This peculiar event changes her DNA, and she mysteriously stops aging. As a result, she remains young, while her friends and lovers grow old. Inevitably, suspicions and rumors start, and she is forced to leave town. Instead of rejoicing in her limitless youth, she withdraws from society and rarely speaks to anyone. Immortality, instead of being a gift, is a curse to her. Finally, she is hit by a car and dies in the accident. In the ambulance, the electric shock from the defibrillator not only revives her, it reverses the genetic effects of the lightning bolt, and she becomes mortal. Instead of weeping at her loss of immortality, she rejoices when she finds her first gray hair. While Adeline eventually rejects the promise of immortality, science is actually moving in the other direction, making enormous strides in understanding aging. Scientists concerned with deep space exploration are keenly interested in this research. Because the distance between stars is so great that it may take centuries for a ship to complete its voyage. Thus, the process of building a starship, surviving the voyage to the stars, and settling on distant planets might require several lifetimes. In order to survive the journey, we would have to build multi-generational ships, put our astronauts and pioneers in suspended animation, or extend their lifespans. Let us explore each of these ways in which humans might travel to the stars. Multi-generational ships. Assume that an Earth-like twin has been discovered in space that has an oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere, liquid water, a rocky core, and is a size that closely matches that of the Earth. It sounds like an ideal candidate for habitation. But then you realize that this twin is 100 light-years from Earth. This means that a starship, using perhaps fusion or antimatter propulsion, would require 200 years to reach it. If one generation corresponds to roughly 20 years, this means that 10 generations of humans will be born on the starship, which will be the only home they know. Although this may seem daunting, realize that during the Middle Ages, master architects would design grand cathedrals, knowing that they would not live long enough to see the completion of their masterpieces. They knew that perhaps their grandchildren would be the ones to celebrate the opening of the cathedral. Also, realize that during the Great Diaspora, when humans began to leave Africa roughly 75,000 years ago in search of a new home, they realized that perhaps it would take many generations for them to complete their journey. So the concept of a multi-generation voyage is not a new one. But there are problems that have to be faced if you are traveling on a starship. First, The population has to be chosen very carefully, with at least 200 people per ship, in order to have a sustainable breeding population. The number of people has to be monitored so that the population remains relatively constant and they do not exhaust supplies. Even the slightest deviation in population, extended over 10 generations, could lead to a disastrous overpopulation or underpopulation, which would threaten the entire mission. So a variety of methods, such as cloning, artificial insemination, and test tube babies, might be required to keep the population stable over time. Second, resources would have to be carefully monitored as well. Food and waste would have to be recycled constantly. Nothing could be thrown away. There is also the problem of boredom. For example, people living on small islands often complain of island fever, the intense feeling of claustrophobia, and the burning desire to leave the island and explore new worlds. One possible solution would be to use virtual reality to create imaginary, fanciful worlds using advanced computer simulations. Another possibility is to create goals, contests, tasks, and jobs for people so that their lives have direction and purpose. In addition, decisions have to be made on board the ship, such as the allocation of resources and duties. A democratically elected body will have to be created to supervise the day-to-day operation of the ship. But this leaves open the possibility that a future generation might not want to fulfill the original mission, or that a charismatic demagogue might take over and subvert it. There is one way, however, of eliminating many of these problems: resorting to suspended animation. Modern science and aging. In the movie 2001, a crew of astronauts are kept frozen in pods as their giant ship makes the arduous journey to Jupiter. Their bodily functions are reduced to zero, so there are none of the complications associated with multi-generational starships. Since the passengers are frozen, the mission designers would not have to worry about the astronauts consuming large quantities of resources or keeping the population stable. But is this really possible? Anyone who has lived in the North during wintertime knows that fish and frogs can be frozen solid in the ice, and that when spring comes and the ice melts, they will emerge as if nothing happened. Normally, we would expect the freezing process to kill these animals. As you lower the temperature of blood, ice crystals begin to grow and expand both within the cells, eventually rupturing the cell wall, and also outside the cells, potentially squeezing and crushing them. Mother Nature solves this problem using a simple solution: antifreeze. During winter, we put antifreeze in our cars in order to lower the freezing point of water. In the same way, Mother Nature uses glucose as an antifreeze, thereby lowering the freezing point of blood. So although the animal is frozen in a block of ice, the blood in its veins is still liquid and can still perform basic bodily functions. For humans, this high concentration of glucose in our bodies would be toxic and would kill us. So scientists have experimented with other kinds of chemical antifreezes in a process they call vitrification, which involves using a combination of chemicals to lower the freezing point so that ice crystals do not form. Although it sounds intriguing, the results have been disappointing so far. Vitrification often has adverse side effects. The chemicals used in the labs are often poisonous and can be lethal. To date, no one has ever been frozen solid, then thawed out, and lived to tell about it. So we are a long way from effectively achieving suspended animation. This hasn't stopped entrepreneurs from prematurely advertising this as a way to cheat death. They claim that people with fatal illnesses can have their bodies frozen for a hefty fee and then be revived decades later when their diseases can be cured. However, there is absolutely no experimental proof that this process works. Scientists hope that in time, these technical questions might be solved. So on paper, suspended animation may be the ideal way to solve many of the problems of long-term voyages. Although it is not a practical option today, in the future, it might be one of the chief methods of surviving interstellar missions. However, there is one problem with suspended animation. If there is an unexpected emergency, such as an asteroid impact, then humans may be required to fix the damage. Robots may be activated to make the initial repairs, but if the emergency is severe enough, human experience and judgment will be required. This might mean that some of the passengers who are engineers may have to be revived. But this last-minute option could be fatal if it takes too long to revive the engineers and human intervention is required immediately. This is the weak point in an interstellar voyage using suspended animation. It may be that a small, multi-generational society of engineers would have to be kept awake and ready during the entire voyage. Send in the clones. Yet another proposal to colonize the galaxy is to send embryos containing our DNA into space, in the hopes that one day they may be revived at some distant destination. Or we could send the DNA code itself, to eventually be used to create new humans. This was the method mentioned in the movie Man of Steel. Although Superman's home planet Krypton had exploded, the Kryptonians were advanced enough to sequence the DNA of the entire Kryptonian population before the planet blew up. The plan was that this information could be sent to a planet like Earth, and then the DNA sequence could be used to create clones of the original Kryptonians. The only problem was that this might involve taking over the Earth and getting rid of humans, who are unfortunately in the way. There are advantages to the cloning approach. Instead of having gigantic starships containing huge artificial Earth-like environments and life support systems, this would only involve transplanting DNA. Even large tanks of human embryos could easily fit inside a standard rocket ship. Not surprisingly, science fiction writers have imagined that this happened eons ago, when some pre-human species might have spread their DNA in our sector of the galaxy, making possible the rise of humanity. There are, however, several drawbacks to this proposal. At present, no human has ever been cloned. In fact, no primate has ever been successfully cloned either. The technology is not yet advanced enough to create human clones, although it might be accomplished in the future. If so, robots might be designed to create and take care of these clones. More important, reviving human clones might create creatures genetically identical to us, but they won't have our memories or personality. They will be a blank slate. At present, the ability to send a person's entire memory and personality in this way is far beyond our capabilities. Again, this requires a technology that will take decades or centuries to create, if it's possible at all. But rather than being frozen or cloned, perhaps another way one can journey to the stars is to slow down or even stop the aging process. Search for immortality. The search for eternal life is one of the oldest themes in all of human literature. It goes back to the Epic of Gilgamesh, written nearly 5,000 years ago. The poem chronicles the exploits of a Sumerian warrior on a noble quest. Along the way, he has many adventures and encounters, including one with a Noah-like individual who witnessed the Great Flood. The goal of this long journey is to find the secret of immortality. In the Bible, God banished Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden after they disobeyed him and ate from the tree of knowledge. God was angry because they might use this knowledge to become immortal. Humanity has been obsessed with immortality for ages. For much of human history, infants died in childbirth, and the lucky ones who survived often lived in a state of near starvation. Epidemics would spread like wildfire because people often threw their kitchen garbage out the window. Sanitation as we know it did not exist, so villages and cities reeked. Hospitals, if they existed at all, were places for the poor to die. They were warehouses for destitute, poverty-stricken patients, since the rich could afford to have private physicians. But the rich were also victims of disease, and their private doctors were little more than quacks. One Midwestern doctor kept a diary of his daily visits to patients. He confessed that there were only two items in his black bag that actually worked. Everything else was snake oil. What actually worked was the hacksaw to cut off injured and diseased limbs, and morphine to dull the pain of amputation. In 1900, the official life expectancy in the United States was 49, but two revolutions added decades to that number. First, sanitation improved, which gave us clean water and waste removal and helped to eliminate some of the worst epidemics and plagues, adding about 15 years to our life expectancy. The next revolution was in medicine. We often take for granted that our ancestors lived in mortal fear of a bestiary of ancient diseases, like tuberculosis, smallpox, measles, polio, whooping cough, and so on. In the post-war era, these diseases were largely conquered by antibiotics and vaccines, adding another 10 years to our life expectancy. During this time, the reputation of hospitals changed significantly. They became places where real cures for diseases were dispensed. So can modern science now unlock the secrets of the aging process, slowing down or even stopping the clock, increasing life expectancy to an almost limitless degree? This is an ancient quest. But what is new is that it has now gained the attention of some of the richest people on the planet. In fact, there is an influx of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs investing millions to defeat the aging process. Not content to wire up the world, their next goal is to live forever. Sergey Brin, the co-founder of Google, hopes to do nothing less than cure death. And Calico, led by Brin, may eventually dump billions into a partnership with the pharmaceutical company AbbVie to tackle the problem. Larry Ellison, co-founder of Oracle, thinks that accepting mortality is incomprehensible. Peter Thiel, the co-founder of PayPal, wants to live to a modest 120 years, while Russian internet tycoon Dmitry Itzkov wants to live to 10,000 years. With the support of people like Brin and technological innovations, we may finally be able to use the full force of modern science to unlock this age-old mystery and extend our lifespan. Recently, scientists have revealed some of the deepest secrets of the aging process. After centuries of false starts, there are now a few reliable, testable theories that seem promising. These involve caloric restriction, telomerase, and age genes. Of these, one and only one method has proven to extend the lifespan of animals, sometimes even doubling it. It is called caloric restriction, or severely limiting the intake of calories in an animal's diet. On average, animals that eat 30% fewer calories live 30% longer. This has been amply demonstrated with yeast cells, worms, insects, mice and rats, dogs and cats, and now primates. In fact, it is the only method that is universally accepted by scientists to alter the lifespan of all animals that have been tested so far. The only important animal that has not yet been tested is humans. The theory is that animals in the wild naturally live in a state of near starvation. These animals use their limited resources to reproduce during times of plenty, but during hard times, they enter a state of near hibernation to conserve their resources and live past the famine. Feeding animals less food triggers the second biological response, and they live longer. One problem with caloric restriction, however, is that these animals become lethargic, sluggish, and lose interest in sex. And most humans would balk at the prospect of eating 30% fewer calories. So the pharmaceutical industry would like to find the chemicals that govern this process and harness the power of caloric restriction without its glaring side effects. Recently, a promising chemical called resveratrol has been isolated. Resveratrol, found in red wine, helps to activate the sirtuin molecule, which has been shown to slow down the oxidation process, a principal component in aging. And therefore, it may help protect the body from age-related molecular damage. I once interviewed Leonard P. Guarente, the MIT researcher who was one of the first to show the link between these chemicals and the aging process. He was surprised at the number of food faddists who have latched onto it as a fountain of youth. He doubted this was the case, but left open the possibility that if the true cure for aging was ever found, resveratrol and these chemicals may play some role. He even co-founded a company, Elysium Health, to explore these possibilities. Another clue to the cause of aging might be telomerase, which helps to regulate our biological clock. Every time a cell divides, the tips of the chromosomes, called telomeres, get a bit shorter. Eventually, after approximately 50 to 60 divisions, the telomeres become so short that they disappear and the chromosome begins to fall apart. So the cell enters a state of senescence and no longer functions correctly. Thus, there is a limit to how many times a cell can divide, called the Hayflick limit. I once interviewed Dr. Leonard Hayflick, who laughed when asked if the Hayflick limit can somehow be reversed to give us the cure for death. He was extremely skeptical. He realized that this biological limit was fundamental to the aging process, but its consequences are still being studied. And because aging is a complex biochemical process involving many different pathways, we are a long way from being able to alter that limit in humans. Nobel laureate Elizabeth Blackburn is more optimistic and says, "Every sign, including genetics, says there's some causality between telomeres and the nasty things that happen with aging." She notes that there is a direct link between shortened telomeres and certain diseases. For example, if you have shortened telomeres, if your telomeres are in the bottom third of the population in terms of length, then your risk of cardiovascular disease is 40% greater. Telomere shortening, she concludes, seems to underlie the risks for the diseases that kill you: heart disease, diabetes, cancer, even Alzheimer's. Recently, scientists have been experimenting with telomerase, the enzyme discovered by Blackburn and her colleagues that prevents the telomeres from shortening. It can, in some sense, stop the clock. When bathed in telomerase, skin cells can divide indefinitely, far beyond the Hayflick limit. I once interviewed Dr. Michael D. West, then of the Geron Corporation, who experiments with telomerase and claims that he can immortalize a skin cell in the lab so that it lives indefinitely. This has added a new verb to the English language, to immortalize. The skin cells in his lab can divide hundreds of times, not just 50 or 60. But it should be pointed out that telomerase has to be regulated very carefully, because cancer cells are also immortal, and they use telomerase to attain that immortality. In fact, one of the things that separates cancer cells from normal ones is that they live forever and reproduce without limit, eventually creating the tumors that can kill you. So cancer may be an unwanted byproduct of using telomerase. Genetics of aging. Yet another possibility for defeating aging is through gene manipulation. The fact that aging is heavily influenced by our genes is readily apparent. Butterflies, after they emerge from the cocoon, live only for a few days or weeks. Mice studied in laboratories usually live only about 2 years or so. Dogs age about 7 times faster than humans and live a little more than 10 years. In looking at the animal kingdom, we also find animals that live so long that their lifespan is difficult to measure. In 2016, in the journal Science, researchers reported that the Greenland shark has an average lifespan of 272 years, surpassing the 200-year lifespan of the bowhead whale, making it the longest-lived vertebrate. They calculated the age of these sharks by analyzing the layers of tissue in their eyes, which grow with time, layer for layer, like an onion. They even found one shark that was 392 years old, and another that might be as old as 512. So different species, with different genetic makeup, vary widely in life expectancy. But even among humans, with our almost identical genes, studies have consistently shown that twins and close relatives have similar life expectancies and that people chosen at random vary far more widely. So if aging is at least partially governed by genes, the key is to isolate those genes that control it. There are several avenues of approach. A promising one is to analyze the genes of young people and then compare these genes with those of the old. By comparing the two sets using a computer, one can rapidly isolate where most of the genetic damage caused by aging takes place. For example, aging in a car takes place mainly in the engine, where the oxidation and wear and tear take the greatest toll. The engines of a cell are the mitochondria. That's where sugars are oxidized to extract energy. A careful analysis of the DNA within the mitochondria indicates that errors are indeed concentrated here. The hope is that one day scientists might use the cell's own repair mechanisms to reverse the buildup of errors in the mitochondria and therefore prolong the cell's useful life. Thomas Perls of Boston University analyzed the genes of centenarians on the assumption that some people are genetically disposed to live longer, and identified 281 markers for genes that seem to slow down the aging process and somehow make these centenarians less vulnerable to disease. The mechanism of aging is slowly being revealed, and many scientists are cautiously optimistic that it might be controllable sometime in the coming decades. Their research shows that aging, apparently, is nothing but the accumulation of errors in our DNA and our cells. And perhaps one day we can arrest or even reverse this damage. In fact, some Harvard professors are so optimistic about their research that they have even set up companies in hopes of capitalizing on the advanced aging research being done in their labs. So the fact that our genes play an important role in how long we live is indisputable. The problem arises in identifying which genes are involved in this process, separating out environmental effects, and altering these genes. Controversial aging theories. One of the oldest of myths concerning aging is that you can achieve eternal youth by drinking the blood or consuming the soul of the young, as if youth can be transferred from one person to another, as in the vampire legend. The succubus is a beautiful mythical creature who remains eternally youthful because when she kisses you, she sucks the youth from your body. Modern research indicates there might be a kernel of truth to this idea. In 1956, Clive M. McKay of Cornell University sewed the blood vessels of two rats together, one old and decrepit, and the other young and vigorous. He was astonished to find that the old mouse started to look younger, while the reverse happened to the young mouse. Decades later, in 2014, Amy Wagers at Harvard University re-examined this experiment. Much to her surprise, she found the same rejuvenation effect among mice. She then isolated a protein called GDF11 that seems to underlie this process. These results were so remarkable that Science magazine chose it as one of the 10 breakthroughs of the year. But in the years since this astonishing claim, other groups have tried to duplicate this research with mixed results. It remains unclear whether GDF11 will be a valuable weapon in the quest to fight aging. Another controversy involves the human growth hormone, HGH, which has created an enormous fad. But its effectiveness in preventing aging is based on very few reliable studies. In 2017, a major study on more than 800 subjects by the University of Haifa in Israel found evidence of the opposite effect, that HGH might actually decrease a person's life expectancy. Furthermore, another study indicates that a genetic mutation that results in a reduced HGH level may lengthen the human lifespan, so the effect of HGH may backfire. These studies teach us a lesson. In the past, wild claims concerning aging often faded when analyzed carefully. But today, researchers demand that all results be testable, reproducible, and falsifiable, the hallmark of true science. Biogerontology, a new science that seeks to find the secret of the aging process, is being born. Recently, there has been an explosion of activity in this area, and a host of promising genes, proteins, processes, and chemicals are being analyzed, including FOXO3, DNA methylation, mTOR, insulin growth factor, RAS2, acarbose, metformin, alpha-estradiol, etc. Each has generated enormous interest among scientists, but results are still preliminary. Time will tell which avenue promises the best results. Today, the quest for the Fountain of Youth, a field once populated by mystics, charlatans, and quacks, is now being tackled by the world's leading scientists. Although a cure for aging does not yet exist, scientists are pursuing many promising avenues of research. Already, they can extend the lifespan of certain animals, but it remains to be seen if this can be transferred to humans. Although the pace of research has been incredible, we are still a long way from being able to solve the mystery of aging. Eventually, a way might be found to slow down and even stop the aging process using a combination of several of these avenues. Perhaps the next generation will make the necessary breakthroughs. As Gerald Sussman once lamented, "I don't think the time is quite right, but it's close. I'm afraid, unfortunately, that I'm in the last generation to die." Another perspective on immortality. Adeline may have regretted the gift of immortality, and she's probably not alone, but many people still want to stop the effects of aging. A trip to the local pharmacy reveals row after row of over-the-counter potions that claim to reverse the aging process. Unfortunately, all of them are the byproduct of the overheated imagination of Madison Avenue marketers trying to sell snake oil to gullible customers. According to many dermatologists, the one ingredient in all these anti-aging potions that actually works is moisturizer. I once hosted a BBC TV special in which I went to Central Park and interviewed some random bystanders. I asked, "If I had the Fountain of Youth in my hand, would you drink from it?" Surprisingly, every person I interviewed said no. Many said it was a normal thing to age and die. It was the way it should be, and dying was part of living. I then went to a nursing home where many of the patients were suffering from the pain and discomforts of aging. Many were beginning to show signs of Alzheimer's and were forgetting who and where they were. When I asked them if they would drink from the Fountain of Youth, they all eagerly said yes. Overpopulation. What happens if we solve the problem of aging? When and if this happens, then the vast distance to the stars may not seem so daunting. Immortal beings may view interstellar travel in a completely different way than we do. They may view the enormous time required to build starships and send them to the stars as just a small obstacle. In the same way we save up months for a long-awaited vacation, immortal beings may view the centuries necessary to visit the stars as nothing more than an annoyance. It should be pointed out that the gift of immortality may have an unintended consequence, which is to create a vast overpopulation of the Earth. This may place huge strains on the resources, food, and energy of the planet, leading eventually to blackouts, mass migrations, food riots, and conflicts between nations. So immortality, instead of ushering in an age of Aquarius, may spark a new wave of world wars. All this, in turn, may help to accelerate the mass exodus from the Earth, providing a safe haven for pioneers who are tired of an overpopulated and polluted planet. Like Adeline, people might realize that the gift of immortality was actually a curse. But just how serious is this concern with overpopulation? Will it threaten our very existence? For most of history, the human population was well under 300 million. But with the coming of the Industrial Revolution, the world population slowly grew to 1.5 billion by 1900. It is now 7.5 billion and grows by a billion every 12 years or so. The UN estimates that by 2100, it will soar to 11.2 billion. Eventually, we may exceed the carrying capacity of the planet, which could mean food riots and chaos, as Thomas Robert Malthus predicted back in 1798. In fact, overpopulation is one reason why some people advocate going to the stars. But a closer examination of the issue shows that the growth of the world population, although still rising, is slowing down. The UN, for example, has revised its predictions downward several times. Many demographers, in fact, predict that the world population will begin to level off and might even stabilize late in the 21st century. To understand all these demographic changes, we have to understand the worldview of a peasant. A farmer in a poor country does a simple calculus. Every child makes him richer. Children work in the fields and cost very little to raise. Room and board on a farm are almost free. But when you move to the city, the calculus flips the other way. Every child makes you poorer. Your child goes to school, not the fields. Your child has to be fed from the grocery store, which is expensive. Your kid has to live in an apartment, which costs money. So a peasant, once he becomes more urban, wants 2 kids, not 10. And when the peasant enters the middle class, he wants to enjoy life a bit and may only have 1 child. Even in countries like Bangladesh, which does not have much of an urbanized middle class, the birth rate is slowly falling. This is due to the education of women. Studies of numerous nations have found a distinct pattern. The birth rate falls dramatically as a nation industrializes, urbanizes, and educates young girls. Other demographers have argued that it is a tale of two worlds. On the one hand, we see a continuing rise in the birth rate in poor countries with low levels of education and a weak economy. On the other hand, we see a leveling off of the birth rate and even contraction in some countries as they develop industry and become more prosperous. In any event, an exploding world population, although still a threat, is not as inevitable or terrifying as previously thought. Some analysts are concerned that we will shortly exceed our food supply. Others, however, have argued that the food problem is actually an energy problem. If one has enough energy, one can increase productivity and crop production to keep up with demand. On a number of occasions, I have had the opportunity to interview Lester Brown, one of the world's leading environmentalists and founder of the famed World Watch Institute, a think tank for the Earth. His organization closely monitors the world's food supply and the state of the planet. He is worried about another factor. Do we have enough food to feed the people of the world as they become middle-class consumers? The hundreds of millions of people in China and India who are now entering the middle class watch Western movies and want to emulate that lifestyle, with its wasteful use of resources, large consumption of meat, big houses, fixation on luxury goods, etc. He is concerned we may not have enough resources to feed the population as a whole, and certainly would have difficulty feeding those who want to consume a Western diet. His hope is that as poor nations industrialize, they do not follow the historic path of the West and instead adopt strict environmental laws to conserve resources. Time will tell if the nations of the world can meet this challenge. So we see that advances in slowing down or stopping the aging process could have a profound effect on space travel. They could create beings who do not see the vast distances to the stars as an obstacle. They may want to embark upon challenges that take many years, such as building and then sailing starships on voyages that may take centuries. Furthermore, Attempts to alter the aging process may exacerbate overpopulation of the Earth, which in turn may accelerate the exodus from the Earth. Colonists to the stars may be pushed to leave the Earth if overpopulation becomes unbearable. However, it is still too early to tell which of these trends will dominate the next century. But given the rate at which we are now unraveling the aging process, these developments may come sooner than expected. Digital immortality. In addition to biological immortality, there is a second type, called digital immortality, which raises some interesting philosophical questions. In the long run, digital immortality may be the most efficient way to explore the stars. If our fragile biological bodies cannot stand the strain of interstellar travel, there is the possibility of sending our consciousness to the stars instead. When we try to reconstruct our genealogy, we often encounter a problem. After about three generations, the trail runs cold. The vast majority of our ancestors lived and died without leaving any evidence of their existence other than their offspring. But today, we leave a huge digital footprint. For example, just by analyzing your credit card transactions, it is possible to tell the countries you visit, the food you like to eat, the clothes you wear, the schools you attended. To this, add your blog posts, diaries, emails, videos, photos, etc. With all of this information, it is possible to create a holographic image of you that talks and acts just like you, with your mannerisms and memories. One day, we might have a library of souls. Instead of reading a book on Winston Churchill, we might have a conversation with him. We would talk to a projection with his facial gestures, body movements, and voice inflections. The digital record would have access to his biographical data, his writings, and his opinions on political, religious, and personal matters. In all ways, it would feel like talking to the man himself. I would personally enjoy having a conversation with Albert Einstein to discuss the theory of relativity. One day, your great-great-great-grandchildren may have a conversation with you. This is one form of digital immortality. But is this really you? It is a machine or simulation that has your mannerisms and biographical details. The soul, some would argue, cannot be reduced to information. But what happens when we are able to reproduce your brain, neuron for neuron, so that all your memories and feelings are recorded? The next level of digital immortality beyond the Library of Souls is the Human Connectome Project, an ambitious effort to digitize the entire human brain. As Daniel Hillis, co-founder of Thinking Machines, once said, "I'm as fond of my body as anyone, but if I can be 200 with a body of silicon, I'll take it." Two ways to digitize the mind. There are actually two separate approaches to digitizing the human brain. The first is the Human Brain Project, in which the Swiss are trying to create a computer program that can simulate all of the brain's basic features using transistors instead of neurons. So far, they have been able to simulate the thinking process of a mouse and rabbit for several minutes. The goal of the project is to create a computer that can talk rationally like a normal human being. Its director, Henry Markram, says, "If we build it correctly, it should speak and have an intelligence and behave very much as a human does." So this approach is electronic. It attempts to duplicate the intelligence of the brain with a vast array of transistors with tremendous computing power. But a parallel approach is being pursued in the United States, that is biological instead, trying to map out the neural pathways of the brain. This approach is called the BRAIN Initiative, Brain Research Through Advancing Innovative Neurotechnologies. Its goal is to unravel the neural structure of the brain itself, cell by cell, and ultimately to map the pathways of every neuron in the brain. Since the human brain contains roughly 100 billion neurons, each connected to about 10,000 other neurons, it at first seems hopeless to create a roadmap of every neuron. Even the relatively simple task of mapping the brain of the mosquito involves producing data